Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Each day, we bring you a program that helps you learn American English.
We speak at a slower speed and use words that are easy to understand. On today's program, we talk about the importance of reading to a child and ways to raise a reader.
Reading helps a child develop language skills. But experts warn of a troubling trend in the U.S. Fewer children are reading for fun.
Now, doctors as well as reading experts are advising parents on how to bring back the fun and raise lifelong readers. Anna and Kelly Jean Kelly bring us this story.
A new report by the American Academy of Pediatrics says reading aloud is so important that parents should start as soon as their children are born, and they should continue to read aloud even after their children can read by themselves.
Doctors say parents should read books that are not too long and on the right age level, so children will not lose interest. They say parents should also point to and talk about pictures in books for infants. For young children, parents should ask questions about the book. One mom in Washington, D.C. says she has seen the benefits of reading to her children.
Why are children's books so important?
Oh my gosh, we read books every day.
Elizabeth Littleton has three daughters. They are ages 10, 8, and 2.5. Ms. Littleton says all her children learn from books, but in different ways.
Opening minds. I watch the language in my 2.5-year-old, who is now getting, you know, big language explosion. So much of it comes from the books that she reads. So much of her capacity to identify the world around her comes from books that we read together. With my 8-year-old, it's now the broadening horizons. The oldest now truly reads for pleasure and can get absolutely lost in young adults' books.
But children like Miss Littleton's daughters are becoming increasingly rare. Researchers find that the number of children who read for fun is dropping fast.
The company Scholastic is a major U.S. publisher of children's books. Every 2 years, Scholastic publishes a report on American reading attitudes and habits. The 2015 report says only 31% of children in the U.S. read a book for fun almost every day. 4 years ago, that number was more than double.
Scholastic also identifies some ways to develop a love of reading in a child. One is simply to have books in the home. Elizabeth Littleton, the mother of three, was lucky. Her mother wrote and illustrated children's books, so the family always had plenty to read.
I mean, we have bookshelves full of kids' books, and they're still there when we go to my mom's house.
Another way to develop a reading habit in children is to read to them. Researchers from the Scholastic Company found that 80% of children surveyed, of all ages, say they love being read to. And children ages 6 to 11, whose parents do not read to them anymore, say they miss it.
The Scholastic report also suggests permitting children to choose their own books. Of all the 6 to 17-year-olds in the Scholastic study, more than 90% said their favorite books are the ones they chose for themselves.
You are listening to As It Is, a VOA Learning English program. In the first half of the show, we heard about ways to raise a child to be a reader from doctors and reading experts. In the second half of the show, Anna and Kelly explore what kinds of books children like to read according to a new survey from a U.S. book publisher. We will also hear how children's books can affect people well into adulthood. Again, here are Anna and Kelly.
A book does not have to be serious to be good for kids. Elizabeth Littleton says one of her children's favorite books is called Four Hens and a Rooster. It is a big picture book about hens that must defend themselves against a bullying rooster who is trying to take over the farm.
Miss Littleton says the story is awesome and empowering in a bizarre way.
Yes, it is hilarious and awesome and in a really bizarre way super empowering to little girls. My oldest now will read it to the youngest and she gets it. Like she sees the adult humor in it. But is also getting the power message in it.
So. Amanda Ingram is a fifth grade teacher in Washington, D.C. She says the book Holes is popular with her students, many of whom are African American. She says the book is funny, but it also deals with big social issues.
But the book that I've noticed has really made an impact on students is the book Holes. By Lewis Sacker, and the book is really funny but also very serious.
According to Scholastic, 70% of kids in the U.S. between ages 6 and 11 want to read books that are funny.
Of course, adults can enjoy children's books too, and many adults find that the books they read as children taught them lessons they still remember.
Amanda Ingram, the fifth grade teacher, says her favorite children's book is The Little Prince. She says it introduced her to big philosophical ideas.
And my favorite children's book is The Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. And it was the first time that I was exposed to these kind of bigger ideas of philosophy. And I think that it just has these great sort of world topics and lessons that kids can learn at a young age, but they can also revisit the book at an older age.
Vera Song is also a teacher in Washington, D.C. The book Around the World in 80 Days by Jules Verne left a deep mark on her. She says it taught her she needed to be brave and adventurous if she wanted to travel the world. She says she thought of this book often as she traveled from China to the United States to become a teacher.
He decides, like, I'm going to do it. So he travels a lot, and that just inspires me, like, it's time to take the challenge and be open-minded, and the world is large. So I think that is a meaningful book to me.
Did you have a favorite children's book when you were little?
If you have children in your life, what do they like to read? I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And I'm Mario Ritter. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is program from the Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now, the VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories. Each week, we tell about American expressions and where they come from. Today, we talk about railroads. Railroads were important to the development of the United States. The first U.S. railroads were built in eastern states. Trains later connected the East Coast with the West Coast. Train and railway expressions worked their way into American English over a century ago. Many of those terms are still being used today. Railroads changed the look of the United States. They cut through mountains, crossed through wide open prairies, and joined together in cities. The railroads made transporting goods easier. They also gave many Americans the chance to move around the country. Sometimes railroad tracks would not join up in a town, but divide it in two. One side of the tracks might be good, while the other side was not so good. If you say someone is from the wrong side of the tracks, it means they are from the bad side of town. For the train running down the track, there is no right or wrong side. The track is simply the metal structure on which the train runs. To go off track means to move away from one's intended purpose or goal. For example, you could say your career went way off track if you wanted to be a lawyer but became an actor instead. But if you go to law school and complete your studies, your career is back on track. Let's say you finished law school very quickly because you took double the course load. You then could say you fast-tracked your way to becoming a lawyer. In the world of business, it is common to say a project has been fast-tracked or is on a fast track. To stay on track means to pay attention to your goal or purpose. But getting sidetracked is just the opposite. A train that is sidetracked gets sent to a different station or down a different line. Talking about train tracks, a rail is a single piece of steel that is part of the larger railway. Some rails are dangerous to touch. In some cities, a third rail provides power to a subway train, usually operating underground. Electricity passes through the rail. The third rail also is an issue which can fuel a heated debate. At a party, religion or politics could be third rail topics. Talking about them could kill your social life. Many Americans say things get derailed when they go off track or away from a goal, or when they simply go wrong. For example, they might say something like this: "My travel plans got derailed by the bad weather." It usually is bad news when something gets derailed. When something goes off the rails, it is always a bad thing. To go off the rails means a person's project or life is a wreck, or, pardon the expression, a train wreck. When a train reaches its final stop, we say it has reached the end of the line. If you reach the end of the line, you have come to the end of something. Often in old films, this is what the bad guy says just before he kills someone.
It's the end of the line for you, buddy boy.
And we have reached the end of the line for this Words and Their Stories. In other words, the show is over. I'm Ana Mateo.
the end of the line.
I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein with People in America in VOA Special English. Today, we tell about Aaron Copland, one of America's best modern music composers.
Aaron Copland wrote many kinds of music. He wrote music for the orchestra, piano, and voice. He wrote music for plays, movies, and dance. Copland also was a conductor, pianist, speaker, teacher, and author. Music critics say Copland taught Americans about themselves through his music. He used parts of many old traditional American folk songs in his work. He was influenced to do this after studying music in France. He said that composers there had a very French way of writing music. He said Americans had nothing like that in this country. So he decided to compose music that was truly American.
Aaron Copland was born in 1900 in Brooklyn, New York. He was the youngest of five children. His parents had come to the United States from Eastern Europe. They owned a store in Brooklyn. Aaron began playing the piano when he was a young child. He wrote his first song for his mother when he was 8 years old. His dreams of becoming a composer began when he was young. When he was 16, he urged his parents to let him study composing with Reuben Goldmark. Goldmark had taught the composer George Gershwin.
When he was in his early 20s, Copland went to Paris, where he studied music with Nadia Boulanger. She was one of the most important music teachers of the time. He returned to New York in 1924. The famous conductor of the Boston Symphony Orchestra, Serge Koussevitzky, learned about Copland's music. Koussevitzky led the orchestra for the first performance of Copland's early work, Music for the Theater, in 1925. Koussevitzky also conducted Copland's Concerto for Piano and Orchestra in 1927. This work was unusual because Copland used ideas from jazz music in his concerto.
Copland later wrote the music for two ballets about the American West. One was about the life of a famous gunfighter called Billy the Kid. Copland used music from American cowboy songs in this work. This piece from Billy the Kid, Ballet Suite, is called Street in a Frontier Town.
Thank you.
In 1942, the conductor Andre Kostolanitz asked Copeland to write music about a great American, Abraham Lincoln. Copeland wrote a Lincoln portrait to honor America's 16th president. Copeland's music included parts of American folk songs and songs popular during the American Civil War. He added words from President Lincoln's speeches and letters. A Lincoln portrait has been performed many times in America. Many famous people have done the speaking part. Eleanor Roosevelt, the wife of President Franklin Roosevelt, was one of them. Here, actor James Earl Jones performs in Copeland's A Lincoln Portrait.
Abraham Lincoln, 16th President of these United States, is everlasting in the memory of his countrymen. For on the battleground at Gettysburg, this is what he said. He said that from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, and that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth.
Also in 1942, the music director of the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra asked 18 composers to write music expressing love for America. For the competition, Copeland composed Fanfare for the Common Man. This music is played in America during many national events, including some presidential inaugurations.
Experts say Fanfare for the Common Man was an example of Copeland's change in direction during the 1940s. He began writing music that was more easily understood and more popular. Copeland wrote about this in 1941 in his book, Our New Music. He wrote that a whole new public for music had developed as a result of the popularity of the radio and record player. He said that there was no reason to continue writing music as if these devices did not exist. So he decided to write music in a simpler way.
Copland spread his ideas about music in other ways. He taught at the New School for Social Research in New York City and at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts. One of the many awards he received was the Pulitzer Prize. He won it in 1945 for his famous music for a ballet called Appalachian Spring. It is one of his most popular works. The last part of the ballet is based on a traditional song, A Gift to Be Simple.
Copland also wrote music for several major motion pictures. He won an Academy Award in 1950 for composing the music for the film The Heiress. Then he began experimenting with what is called a 12-tone system of composing. His music no longer was as easy to understand or as popular. Copland stopped composing at the end of the 1960s. Yet he continued to be active as a conductor and speaker. In 1982, Queens College of the City University of New York established the Aaron Copland School of Music.
Copland was a strong supporter of liberal ideas. In the early 1950s, he and other famous writers, actors, and intellectuals were accused of supporting communism. Public opinion changed, though. In 1964, President Lyndon Johnson presented him with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. It is America's highest award to civilians. Aaron Copland died in 1990 at the age of 90. But his music lives on.
This special English program was written by Shelley Gullist. It was produced by Lawan Davis. Our studio engineer was Tony Pollack. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein. Join us again next week for another People in America program in VOA Special English.